We have a quorum, so let's call this committee to order. And while we're at it, Rob, did you read the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I did.
Would you like to approve the minutes of March 24th?
I'll move to approve the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Minutes of March 24th have been moved. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Carrie, thank you very much. I will move House File 3210 to be referred to the Jobs Committee. And with that, we got a wonderful author that I get to talk about a lot wherever I go about broadband. Your bill has been moved. Would you like to describe your bill to us, please?
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Before you today is House File 3210. This is a new idea from the Explore Minnesota advisory team that I'm one of a few elected officials that is lucky enough to serve on this committee. It's a innovative staff. It's an innovative pilot project that we're talking about today. I've got some great testifiers here that will talk about this, but it's we're looking for a one-time funding grant of $850,000 to bring in new outside of the state regional and larger type events for areas in our state that have unique ideas, that have great concepts, that have the infrastructure to support such events, but they just don't have quite enough to get it over the launching pad, if I will, to bring it to fruition. Again, it might be Representative Eklund's ideas up in International Falls, where they might do something from an international standpoint, bring some Canadians down and have an idea of something like that. I know they've done some big things before. Rochester has looked at the transplant games in the races, and I think there's just some really good ideas out there floating around. And again, tourism is significant. Every time we bring in outside incremental dollars, this is new state general sales tax funding that we can now realize and enjoy. So I'm going to just keep it fairly simple for me because the experts are next to me. Again, I'm a proud member of the hospitality industry myself. I know how important these are to our local communities, and with this pilot project, you know, we're not talking about recycling events that are already happening in Minnesota. This is something that is new. 5-year is a kind of a requirement to not allow an event to come in within 5 years of this type of a thing. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to turn it over to our testifiers and let them introduce themselves and carry on. So thank you.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Terry Mattson. I'm the President and CEO of Visit St. Paul and the River Center Authority. Here in support of the Explore Minnesota Pilot Events Funding Program or proposal, this is a timely opportunity for all of Minnesota, frankly, to generate more revenue. Events are revenue generators. This is one of those instances where the state of Minnesota is in business. This represents an investment that will pay tremendous dividends. We all know that tourism is one of the very few areas outside of raising taxes or increasing fees where an increased investment grows our bottom line throughout the state. Prior to joining Visit St. Paul 2 years ago, I spent more than 2 decades leading Duluth's tourism industry development. Part of that included conceiving, attracting, and producing world-class events, events such as Tall Ships Duluth, the greatest spectacle on Lake Superior, and other events that created not only millions of dollars of direct economic impact, but also delivered a far-reaching buzz that enhanced Minnesota's image and popularity throughout the country and throughout the world. We don't have to look very far to see the benefit of events like the Major League All-Star Game, the Red Bull Crashed Ice event in St. Paul, the upcoming Ryder Cup, or the 2018 Super Bowl, to see the impact of what these events can do. We have a very good track record in Minnesota. We've been fairly successful, but what we've learned along this journey is that we're missing other opportunities. Opportunities all across the state of Minnesota, and a lot of opportunities. And we know why we're missing out. In thoroughly researching these lost opportunities for Minnesota, we see in comparison to the benchmarks of other states that we're missing an investor. We're missing a valued business partner that needs to be at the table with these communities. And that partner is state government. The state of Minnesota can benefit from these events in terms of increased visitors, sales, increased sales tax revenues, and positive promotion of the state of Minnesota. While there is interest from the state in Explore Minnesota in supporting and attracting additional iconic events, and believe me, they're out there, without a mechanism such as this, the full benefits won't be realized. With three decades of experience in both the metro and greater Minnesota, I can say this is a well thought out proposal. It has support from border to border. We've done our homework along with Explore Minnesota Tourism. There are no regional battles or divides with this proposal. As you will see reflected in other testimonies, there's several specific examples of how this works across the state. I'd like to point out in your packet there's a letter from Brad Jones with the Rochester Convention and Visitors Bureau. And just last week, for example, we have an opportunity to perhaps host the ESPN Summer X Games. With it would come several thousand hotel room nights and worldwide television coverage. While it's still too early to predict, I'm not so certain we can make this work without this type of support from Explore Minnesota. Tourism in Minnesota is a $13 billion a year industry. It generates $840 million in state sales tax revenues. And that's about 17% of Minnesota's sales tax revenues, by the way. Tourism is documented as one of the better ways to create jobs. It supports 250,000 jobs throughout Minnesota at all levels, and tourism rewards government with more tax revenues per dollar spent by consumers than other industries in the state. I want to thank the legislature for its support of Explore Minnesota Tourism. My message is to assure you that we are documenting very, very tangible results and very high return on investment. Any good business mind will tell you that this is an investment worth making. I'm very passionate about this proposal because I live in this business every day. I've seen our success in Duluth. I've seen success in St. Paul. I see it near the Canadian border and in southern Minnesota. But we need your help. We need your investment to share everything we love about Minnesota with the rest of the world. Let's bring more of these iconic events to our home state. Thank you.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record, please.
Thank you. I'm Megan Christensen. I'm the Executive Director of Visit Grand Rapids. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I represent Greater Minnesota, and Greater Minnesota encompasses small, medium, and large-sized destination marketing organizations, or also known as convention visitor bureaus. We represent diverse Minnesota destinations from Thousand Grand Lakes to Prairie Lands and everything in between. We are primarily rural with population and sizes of couple thousands to tens of thousands. We market and promote to lure visitors to our specific locations within Greater Minnesota. Our annual budgets range in tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands. Currently, major events are happening now in more larger, more dense population communities in Greater Minnesota. The major event funding pilot project would allow for all Greater Minnesota communities to help secure more major events to their communities. Major events have the potential to draw thousands and bring increased economic impact throughout overnight lodging and spending by visitors while they are in town for these events. I have just a couple of examples of some of those major events that could be helpful in our area, in the Grand Rapids area. We have three events that we were given potentials for bidding on this year, and we decided that we could not bid on all three of them. And to be quite honest, the one we had to go out and find partners and collaborations to get it to work. We have been awarded a bass fishing tournament this year that we had to find partners for. The ask for communities on these bass tournaments are upwards of $60,000 by the time that you have to provide them with overnight lodging and meals for 80 to 100 people, when you have to provide things like TV site sets, and you have to have electricity and Wi-Fi, and all those things add up very quickly. So that was one we were able to get potential partners with, and I know Mille Lacs Lake has been awarded a bass tournament, and they were able to find collaboratives as well. But in certain circumstances, having a pilot project like this would help with that additional seed money that we are needing to get those in our community. So one example I'm going to give you is Calder Blackwater's Brewfest. This is our first year of this event. It's going to happen in the small community of Cohasset, Minnesota. Our Grand Rapids Rotary has stepped up with with Visit Grand Rapids to help fund this. We have contacted 30 corporate breweries to provide 100 different samplings of brews. We have a live band. Our goal is to draw 5,000 people to town with 250 plus lodging rooms. In addition to that, there is a project in the works right now that we're hoping to grow this event to be multi-events, where we're going to have outdoor recreation races. We have a project that we're working on, the Tioga Project, and the hope is that we can have the races in the morning with the Brew Fest in the afternoon. We will keep them there longer and get them to stay overnight several nights, not just one. The longer that any visitor is in your community, the more money that they will spend, the greater economic impact they have. So they will spend money in your community, not just for lodging or coming to the event, but they will dine out, they will buy gas in your community. If they tend to stay for a longer vacation, they will spend money on bait to go fishing and do other outdoor recreation. So I thank you so much for allowing us this time to present to you.
Thank you very much, Megan.
Thank you. Any questions from the members? Any questions from the audience? Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious as to how much was appropriated in the last session to explore Minnesota tourism. And you're not supposed to ask a question you don't know, but I'm asking a question I'm not really not sure. I know we appropriated some, but I don't remember how much.
I remember appropriating some.
Mr. Chair, we do happen to have Mr. John Edmund here from the Office of Tourism. Maybe he can answer that question for Representative Hancock.
I'm positive he can.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, my name is John Edmund. I'm the Director of Explore Minnesota. I answer your question very simply. Representative is $13.9 million on an annual basis.
How much extra last year, any?
Extra?
Did we increase that last?
Yes. Well, that was increased the previous 3 years ago. It was increased about 67%.
Okay.
If I read the $850,000, you know, in comparison, it's a relatively small amount of money. But how does this particular pilot project really differ from the major mission statement of Explore Minnesota? It seems like they're in many ways duplicative.
Certainly. Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, that's a very good question. The budget that we have of $13.9 million compares about, we're about 25th in the country in terms of total budget. Those dollars are used to market generally to leisure travelers, meeting planners, and international travelers in our target markets. The issue of meetings, events, and funding, we've been getting more and more requests at Explore Minnesota Tourism for assistance to help support meetings in greater Minnesota, in the metro area, et cetera. And we don't have the mechanism where we could provide assistance for both the bidding as well as the operation, because it would take away from the resources we have to market the rest of the state. And again, putting it in perspective, we're still, even though our budget was increased substantially 3 years ago, we're still being outspent by our competitors in Wisconsin and in Michigan and Missouri and Illinois, et cetera. So those states have funds that have different revenue sources like statewide lodging taxes and other car rental fees. Ours, we have to basically talk to you and the legislature every year about what we do, what we get in return on investment, and argue the case. And so we constantly are in the need for additional resources to market the state. And for events funding, we just don't have the funds to do that right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Edmund. It sounds like the project has been being explored, not to use a pun there, but for some time, and I'm just curious as to this not being normally a budget year. Was this not in the planning stages or works for last year? Would it perhaps could have been included in a more normal appropriations bill?
Mr.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the reason that this has come is sort of twofold. Number one, since the last appropriation, there have been more and more requests for Explore Minnesota assistance with this type of things, and we just don't have the resources for that. The second reason this has come for this session is that last summer and fall, we had listening sessions in locations all throughout the state, and we asked the industry, what can we do to better to grow travel and tourism? This was an idea that came out of that in those industry meetings as a way to assist communities throughout the state. We thought that we'd bring this forward, or the industry thought that they would bring this forward as an idea, this session as a pilot program, not part of our normal budget process, but let's see if this works. Let's see how this responds to industry needs and as a test basis. And that's why I think the industry felt it was good to bring this forward during this particular session.
One more follow-up, not to... I don't talk too much, so this is my chance, my time. And it sounds like this is designed more as a one-time appropriation to really see if this type of an approach has real merit. So in that sense, it's something that I'm not too interested in extending funding in off funding years for TAILS. But this being a one-time appropriation, I would be more likely to consider it. I guess that's a statement rather than a question. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I could reply to Representative Hancock, he's got a very good point. I had to ask the Office of Tourism, too, if this is what I wanted to do today as well, because, again, I pushed hard for a good appropriation this last session. But this is unique, and I've been on the advisory board for just a short time, but I've been on CVBs and chambers for so many years, and we've talked about this. I guess I'm just grateful that we actually have a plan and a good grant process that funds about a third, no more than a third, of a local events project. So most of the dollars shall have to be raised locally. Again, there's some good specifics about this. This really promotes a lot of things in greater Minnesota. And again, this is what makes the cash register ring in Minnesota, because we actually can see hard numbers as to what incremental dollars and events and celebrations do when you allow collaboration and ideas to go. And I think this is one that will actually help us make more than what we've seen before. So this is a great one-time pilot project that I really am supportive of. So, but you're asking some terrific questions. Thank you.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess to the testifiers, I'll tell you a short story and then and throw a question in at the end. I worked in the tourist industry as a kid and really realized the impact of tourism industry, the event industry in Minnesota. Last year we heard in Commerce Committee, 2 years ago we heard in Commerce Committee the return on the investment for the advertising dollars was like a 5-to-1 ratio in tax collections for every dollar we laid out there. So are we to expect a similar return?
So one of my examples that I had, I didn't tell you the end number. So our goal is 5,000 people, and our revenue is 75,000, and our budget is about $15,000. So the return is going to be very good on something like that. I think it's 8-to-1, right, is the return on investment for advertising for tourism? 6-to-1, so it's a little bit higher than a 5-to-1. So the return on investment in the tourism world is very, very high. So I think that the dollars, that one of the pieces in here is that it is a pilot project, but if there is revenue from that event, then portion of that goes back in and it helps to continue to fund it. So there's an opportunity that we can continue on this longer, that we see that growth opportunity. And I think that the growth will be very, very, the potential will be very high, especially for greater Minnesota.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, too, I'm looking forward to the report after this hopefully is passed and launched. We're going to be able to give some really good, hard, concrete numbers as to what events were actually launched and landed and how it proceeded, and have some community support with the follow-up for that. So looking forward to that.
Looking forward to it. Any other questions? Seeing none, I will renew my motion to have House File 3210 to be passed and sent on to the Jobs Committee. Okay, and next we have, I don't think we do. Okay, all in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
On
thank you
to
very
your
much.
Committee. Next we have House File 3377. Representative Fabian. I know that. And I will move House File 3377 to pass and be sent to Jobs Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I do have one, excuse me, if it pleases the Chair, I do have one, the A1 amendment that I'd like to have attached to the bill to get it in the shape that I'd like it.
You got it? Okay. Representative Fabian moves the A1 amendment. Will you describe your amendment, please?
Basically, all of this is just on the second page, the very last line. We're going to delete the word, or excuse me, the number 2015, and insert the previous tax year, comma, but shall never be an amount less than zero.
Okay.
And we'll get into that once we get that. Then we can explain it kind of in context of the total bill.
Okay. Representative Fabian moves the A1 amendment. All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Passes. Now to your bill, as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as you know, and many of you know, workforce housing continues to be an issue in much of greater Minnesota, and quite frankly, all of Minnesota. This bill was brought to me by several nonprofit groups, community action programs, and so forth, to develop workforce housing ownership throughout the state. There's a number of employers around the state who are having a difficult time attracting workers due in some part to a shortage of housing. The state has been involved in a number of projects that have to do with rentals, but they've not done very much with regards to home ownership. What I'd like to do with this bill is to try to address some of the hardworking people who have fairly good credit, but who may need a small hand to get something going, or maybe a community just doesn't have enough housing in stock. I think one of the neat things about this bill that attracted me to it is flexible. It allows each community to respond with the kind of housing that makes sense for them. What we're going to do with this in terms of the dollars that are needed is to capture the growth from the Minnesota mortgage and deed tax, which is a tax that a person pays when they sell a home or buy a home, and then create a fund within Minnesota Housing Finance that allows help with new construction, rehab, conversion. When you get into my part of the state, there's a lot of small towns. Sadly, we had an apartment fire in a small town of Badger on March 1st, and they'd converted an old church into an apartment, and there were six family units in there, and of course, they're all gone. And then in the wake of that, only one family remains in Badger, and the rest of them are scattered around the district. And when you have a population to begin with of a little over 300 people, when you lose that many people, it's difficult for your community to deal with. And then the bill also allows for infrastructure costs to be used. I got a couple of witnesses here today to help explain the nuts and bolts, or the hammer and nails of the bill. Jeff Washburn from the Coalition of Community Land Trusts, and Jenny Larson from the Three Rivers CAP Agency. And if you take a look at the bill summary that's in your packet, it really does a good job of explaining how the bill works. In subdivision one, it's just creating this program over at MHFA, and then in subdivision two, it allows for the grants to be awarded for development costs, rehabilitation of existing structures, land development, and so forth. And then in subdivision three, it requires the Commissioner of Housing Finance to develop an application process. And then I think one of the most important parts of the bill is it requires them to consult with interested stakeholders to develop guidelines for the program. Subdivision four provides that the grants be given based on a preference on the amount of non-state contributions to the project, so a local project, the local dollars that are in there, there's a preference given to those. In subdivision 5, provides that MHFA will attempt to distribute the grants equally between the metro and areas in outstate or greater Minnesota. Subdivision 6 is the reporting requirement, and then in Section 2 of the bill, that's where it talks about this appropriation being for 10 years, and it will be on the mortgage and registry track, mortgage registry tax. Wow, that was hard to say. Tracks. I'm a track coach. And then the deed tax that's collected, and it would be the excess from what was collected the previous year. So if X was collected the previous year, anything above X would be diverted back into this program. So with that, Mr. Chair, I can turn it over to our testifiers. They can identify themselves for the record, and then we can open for questions if the chair so pleases. Thank you.
Jeff, would you give your name for the record, please?
Thank you, Chair Gunther. My name is Jeff Washburn. I'm the Executive Director of the City of Lakes Community Land Trust in Minneapolis. Thank you, Representative. I'm here as the Director of the City of Lakes Community Land Trust in Minneapolis, but I also currently serve as the Chair of the Minnesota Community Land Trust Coalition, and then have been an active member in a group that we pulled together last year that we call ourselves HOOM, which stands for Workforce Home Ownership Minnesota. We needed to land on an acronym, so we went that way. But that group, I think, is a really unique collection of organizations that hadn't necessarily worked on anything together, but we all saw a common need across the state, and that was related to creating home ownership opportunities at a much faster rate than what we currently were doing. And that group includes the Community Land Trust. As the representative mentioned, it also includes the coalition of Minnesota CAP agencies, community action programs. It includes manufactured housing across the state of Minnesota, as well as several community development organizations in our communities across the state. Again, all coming together with a specific purpose of creating additional home ownership opportunities in the state. The need. Currently, and as we looked at the numbers of the last 4 years, the State Housing Finance Agency has invested approximately about 4% of their award dollars targeted toward new preservation of housing toward ownership housing. This isn't to say that there isn't great need on homelessness or rental housing, but I think what there is a real need to increase that percentage just a bit, because we know that we could make a huge impact with that. There's a huge need, as was shared, in greater Minnesota, and there's an increasing need for workforce housing in the metro area. One great example in the metro area is a colleague here today, Jim Urchell from Dayton's Bluff Neighborhood Housing Services, has a great new development utilizing some underutilized land on the east side of St. Paul, and dollars like this would create that new housing in the city of St. Paul. Additionally, there's a huge disparity gap in the state along racial lines, and organizations like ours serve households of color at rates 2 to 3 to many times more over what the current local populations are. I know in my case, in the city of Minneapolis, we serve community of color households at a rate 4 times that of the community of color ownership rate in the city of Minneapolis. And again, my colleagues are in a similar situation. This fund, if funded, would double, potentially triple, the number of ownerships annually produced across the state. Many greater Minnesota communities either don't have the capacity or are unable to apply given the competitiveness of the current funds. And in many cases, 2 or 3 homes would make a huge difference in a lot of communities. But to go through a significant amount of work to make those applications, I think, is really daunting, not knowing if you're going to get awarded. And I think this really increases that opportunity to leverage up the number of applications statewide. These funds would incent new development of new housing across the community, across the state. And with that new development, that rehab of homes, that also means jobs. And we're all very intentional about hiring from our local communities as we develop that housing. It's flexible, as was shared by the representative. I know what's going on in Minneapolis, but local organizations who know their communities, all of you know your communities very, very well, and each community has its own need, and this fund would create that flexibility. It's also flexible as it relates to just sources of funding coming out of the House Finance Agency. Rental and homelessness housing has a ton of federal and IRS restrictions related to a lot of that funding. This home ownership fund is simple, straightforward, and flexible. It will also create an opportunity for increasing the tax base across the state. Whether we're bringing a home back to life or we're creating new construction, that is increasing the tax base for our local communities. Just a little bit on Minnesota Community Land Trust. We've, as a coalition, have now served well over 1,500 households in achieving home ownership across the state of Minnesota. Community Land Trust, if you're not familiar with them, we bridge the difference between a household can what they can get a mortgage for and the cost of the housing. That investment, often funded by state housing finance agency dollars, stays with the property so that if and when the household ever decides to sell down the road, we're able to keep those dollars in the property so we can make it a home ownership opportunity for the next household who's looking for housing in our communities. We're taking out limited, very, very important one-time investment and leveraging it multiple households over. Homeowners, also, given our relationship with them, are supported. We're bound by the hip in helping them purchase the homes. We mandate owner occupancy, and we're there to support them through good times and bad to ensure that they are successful in home ownership. I asked some of my colleagues across the state just to give me an example of who it is that they're serving in their communities. A colleague up in Duluth mentioned a household recently of three, a single mom, two kids. She earns $51,000, and she's a teacher, which is about 90% of the area median income there. Also served a household, a couple with two children in Cloquet. Father works for Fond du Lac, and she works for United Healthcare. They earn $61,000, which is 97% of area median income. In Rochester, a registered nurse earns $65,000 a year. These are all households that we'd be able to help in purchasing homes across the state of Minnesota. Thief River Falls, a fulfillment worker at DigiKey earns $32,000 a year. In Minneapolis, hundreds of households that we serve, a good chunk of them are teachers. They work in the healthcare industry. They work for the public sector. They're working. They are just looking for an opportunity to do better for themselves and their families. There's a lot of good ideas that are presented here at the state. This is a really good idea. It's straightforward. There's a practical solution, and we think that we can make a huge difference with the state's investment. Thank you, and I'd like to introduce Jenny Larson.
Mr. Chair, if I may, just for a minute.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is just before staff. I'm guessing that there's going to be some questions with regards to the income requirements within the challenge fund. If you could have those numbers at your fingertips, that would be nice when that does arise.
Okay. I think we have some questions before we'll get to you.
Yep.
Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian or Mr. Washburn. I'm looking at subsection 4, awarding grants, and where it says preference must be given to proposals that include contributions from non-state resources. By saying that, are we really those areas with the greatest need, are we making them least likely to be able to benefit from that? And by doing that, are we really addressing the disparity issue? In other words, especially in certain areas of the state, additional funding sources are very limited. And if we're going to mandate that the state funds basically be used to those who can contribute the most, I think we're sort of defeating our purpose. But I'd like your reactions to that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, two things with regards to that. In Subdivision 5, then we're also attempting to make the grants approximately equal between the metro and non-metro. So I'm hoping that that balances that out, that the word must be given there. But at the same time, Representative Hancock, I'd be happy to work with you and others to get that language to be more in line with what people might be comfortable with and what we can actually work with.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just as a follow-up, I don't think the areas that can't afford it are necessarily urban or rural. In other words, I don't think that's the divide. The divide that I would have would be Well, I just think certain towns up in my section of the state have very little outside sources of contribution, and so their application is going to run up against maybe even some Minneapolis areas, for example, where the local community doesn't have the funds, but the surrounding community can contribute to that local community. Where up north, we simply don't have the if you get my gist there. It isn't an urban-rural issue. It's basically those with the greatest need having the least amount of money they can put towards it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the one thing that many of our communities do have is they do have the land. And in some cases, the infrastructure is there. And that donation could be made in lieu of some other things to help soften that blow. Like I talked about Badger, I met with the mayor of Badger the weekend after the fire, and or 2 weekends after the fire. And that's one of the things that they're considering doing now, is trying to figure out how they can work in their community to get these things done. And I believe that in some cases the cost of the housing may be a little bit less in some of rural Minnesota than it is down here too, but maybe Mr. Washburn has some comments on that as well.
Mr. Washburn.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative, I think from a practitioner perspective, very quick to say that the fewer restrictions, I think my colleagues would agree, the better for us, and allows us to be more innovative in how we create the ownership housing. That stated, I believe that many of our communities have an opportunity to seek out those local matches, whether it be through land or other creative local employers who are able to match those funds. I can speak to my case in the city of Minneapolis, is that I'm of belief that our city, our municipality, really needs to step in a much bigger way in as it relates to supporting home ownership in our city. And I see fund like this as really providing a lot of juice for me to go to that city council and say, look, are we willing to walk away from this opportunity without you being able to step up and provide a match or a leverage in that regard? Hopefully that answers your question, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just maybe I think if we change the word must to may, it would remove a restriction and allow a little more of an area where you could take some of those considerations into effect.
Mr. Chair, I have must circled and highlighted for our next stop.
We have next Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a quick comment. You know, I guess a question. We've been hearing bills for the last 2 years. Last year, we heard many, many bills, and I was asking the staff about what they come to, and I think they totaled somewhere of $100 million to deal with workforce housing and affordable housing, and we didn't really do much with those. And so in this past year, I know we did a little bit for Perm, or I think there was a
pilot project
that we did, but we really didn't do much else this last year. And I'm just picking on Representative Garofalo because he just walked in. But so I guess this is a bipartisan bill. It's a great idea, but I guess I'm having a hard time. How do we measure this bill compared with the $100 million worth of bill requests that came through last year, and choose the right one, Mr. Chair? And maybe the question is really for you. Are we going to review the bills from the last year are still alive and available, and I think you had some, Representative Fabian, and where's HFA in relation to your bill and these others? Is someone going to weigh in and help this committee or that committee decide which are the very best bills?
Well, MHFA and I have a great working relationship.
Are they going to speak to your bill, Representative
I'm not,
Fabian?
I think they're neutral on the bill is the word that I've gotten. But you could certainly ask them to come down.
I think what we're talking about is MFHA's $100 million that they got, that the governor recommended that they get for Minnesota Housing Finance. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about the number of bills that we've heard over the last year on different housing approaches. I'm just having a really hard time. This is a great bill. I may even be a co-author. How do we look over the ones that we didn't pass last year and this one and weigh them? And Representative Fabian, maybe you think this is the best option of the ones that you brought forward, and good, you know, I think that's great. I just was asking the chair, you if you could give me some help with that.
Well, I think Representative Fabian's the one to ask because he's the one that got one passed. And I would love to have you tell us about your bill.
I got lucky, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Norton, the TIF bill, for example, that I did last year, which, you know, that doesn't require anything basically from the state. It's a tool that's put in the local drawer. This is a little bit different. You know, what we're doing here is we're trying to take the excess funding, not excess, but the funding that's over and above the previous year. So like I used the reference to X, if X amount of dollars were brought in as a result of these two taxes, the deed tax and so forth, any increase in that then would be directed towards, in the next year, would be directed toward this particular program within MHFA. And I think what maybe makes this one different is we're trying to zero in a little bit more on ownership at the beginning. And Representative Green and I had a conversation at the beginning of the session or sometime during the session last year about rental versus ownership and, you know, some of those things. I think that this is another tool that might go into the drawer that a local community might have access to and might choose to use to best serve their community, whether it's in Minneapolis or it's in Thief River Falls or wherever.
And Mr. Chair, just for clarification, as I read this, this is more about workforce housing as opposed to affordable housing. And some of the bills, Mr. Chair, that I was referencing were about affordable housing last year, too. I mean, we've had a plethora of requests. And am I correct in that, Representative Fabian?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Norton, yes. And for me personally, in my district, the workforce housing has been the bigger issue as opposed to the affordable housing. And that's what we've tried to zero in on.
Thank you.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fabian, I just want you to clarify some stuff in the bill for me, okay? In 1.22 to 1.24, as opposed to 2.26, or excuse me, 2.6, 2.8, it seems like on the one hand, you're, and maybe the statutes clarify this in section 462A, but it looks like you're putting income limits on who can get helped here, and then over in 2.26, then you're opening that up again and on a different scale. And I know from speaking to people, including people in your area, and what I was hoping that this bill would do, if there's even money available for it, is to try to hit those people who fall into the category where they make too much for the affordable housing and they're blocked out from even buying homes in certain areas because they go over a threshold, but they don't have the money to buy the $250,000 house and they're stuck in an apartment because they fall into that category. And as we had many conversations, my preference would have been more to working with the manufacturers and the industry, the employers, and doing something that would take us outside of the state realm because of the strings that are always tied to these grants and these programs. So can you clarify for me how this is going to help those people when it, unless I'm reading it wrong, there seems to be a little bit of contradiction as to where the money goes. And at the same time, I'll ask the other question too, is there any idea how much money is going to be available? Because it looks like it's going to be dependent on how much money comes in. So this, even if this passes, it might be irrelevant if the revenue's not there.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to the second point, the number that's been most common in the conversations that I have is hoping that things continue to move along like they are is from about 6 to 10 million would be the increase. And with regards to the two other things, I'm not, you know, these numbers with regards to the income limits and stuff, that's kind of why I tried to prep staff to see if they could help with that a little bit. And then Mr. Washburn's also got a comment that he'd like to
Mr.
make
Washburn.
On that. So we want to clarify those.
Chair Gunther, Representative Green, we did a little bit of a breakdown of each one of those subdivisions. And the information I have here, hopefully will clarify that subdivision 2B sets the program's income limits at 115% of the greater of state or area median income. So what that translates to in the Twin Cities Metro is $99,500. 93.9 in Rochester MSA and 89,000 in the balance of the state. Then it goes on to state, except for where projects assist in the elimination of substandard housing conditions and prevent the reoccurrence of such conditions by housing persons of a wide range of incomes in the same development, in these projects there would be no income limits. So I would also offer that, for example, my organization, we have a self-imposed limit of 80% of our area median income. So we still would see a different focus within our community, but the whole goal of this group was to say there's greater needs across the state, and how do we really create the flexibility, again, that could be dictated by the local communities and serving the community, the households in the communities. Does that answer your question, sir?
Well, not exactly, but we keep going. We keep going. I'll let it go. We'll move it, I guess. But
with that, we will have Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, just wondering a little bit. I know in some other committees I've been on, one thing that's always been in the bills dealing with the grants is a cap for administration costs. Is that dealt with this in here? Because we've had some issues in the past where the people running it end up taking more money for administration costs of the programs and less going out to the actual program itself.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, if MHFA would come down, they could talk to that. But I'm not exactly sure what happens in all CAP agencies, but in my local CAP agencies, their overhead costs are extremely low when it comes to programs like this. And I don't know the number, the percentage-wise, but they do awfully good work with the limited resources that they have and the vast portfolio of programs that they have under their jurisdiction.
Mr. Chair, I'm Katie Topinka, Legislative Director from the Housing Finance Agency, and Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, from the Housing Finance Agency standpoint, we do not use state appropriations for administrative costs, so at least from the administering of the grant program, it would not need to come out of the appropriations in terms of the agency's administering of the program. Typically, when we award grants, there are some administrative fees that go to the grantees, and I could certainly get back to you with what the typical fees are, and perhaps some of the testifiers could speak to what their fees are, but it's, in terms of the agency, we would not be looking for administrative dollars.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the information, but I want to make sure if we do this, we can get the most funds out there to help the people.
Thank you very much. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, this really sounds like a good bill. I think it's something that I can, you know, support and sign on to. And maybe you can give us some clarity around the funding, how you capture the funding piece of this to pay for workforce housing or workforce home ownership.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moran, in subdivision, in section two of the bill, that's where it talks about the capturing of the mortgage registry tax. I got it right that time. And then also the deed tax. When you buy and sell a home, the buyers and the sellers have to pay a tax, okay, that goes to the state of Minnesota. So in the previous fiscal year, that tax was paid and X amount of money was generated. What this bill does is it takes then any growth in that tax in this next year, so this would be fiscal year 17, any funds that would be in addition to the funds that were generated in fiscal year 16 would be funds that would be diverted into this program at Minnesota Housing Finance Authority.
So, Mr. Chair, sorry, I think I understand. So any growth between years will go into this fund?
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And
go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moran, this bill then has a sunset at 10 years.
Yes. Thank you.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author, the growth that you speak of that would otherwise be spent on programs where it's going now, past growth, that's going to starve some programs on the other end. What are those programs that will not realize this growth money should your program be funded?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's my understanding that at the current time, those registry tax and the deed tax goes to the state general fund. So it would be up to you to decide which ones are going to get starved.
Okay. Thank you. Sunday. I will be doing that.
Seeing no other questions from members, any questions from the audience? We got one more test file. Excuse me. You've been waiting a long time.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I'm going to keep it nice and short. I think it's been good discussion so far, and my colleague Jeff explained a lot of what we as practitioners out in the field might do with the funds. I want to just talk about a couple of examples of families that we've been serving. My name is Jenny Larson. I work at Three Rivers Community Action in southern Minnesota. So we are the CAP agency that serves southeast Minnesota, including the city of Rochester. And we do a wide array of housing programs. So we do everything from homeless prevention programs. We build and own rental housing. And then we have a pretty robust home ownership program. And we really feel like communities need to have the whole package in order to be strong. And one of the things we're really focusing on in recent years is our homeownership, creating homeownership opportunities for Minnesota's diversifying workforce. In the past few years, we've helped almost 350 households of color in our region achieve homeownership. In southern Minnesota, our diversity is coming from new immigrant households, new to Minnesota, new to this country, making southern Minnesota their homes because of the jobs that are there. We've, in the past few years, have served families like Melanie and Juan, who were living in Goodhue and commuting over 30 miles to work in Rochester because they struggled to find a house in their price range that would meet the needs of their growing family. They wanted to buy a house, and they were having trouble finding a home. Houses in Rochester that are under $170,000 are selling within days. Often with multiple offers, we can't help the families that are in our programs and our homeownership programs find the houses that they need. There's simply a shortage of housing. Another example is a recent Karen immigrant, Purr, who was commuting close to 2 hours each way from the Twin Cities to a job in Austin until he and his wife, Sue, were able to purchase a home for their family using down payment assistance from Three Rivers. They wanted to live in Austin. It took them a little bit of help to get that done, so he wasn't commuting that far for his job. So we know that these programs work. We know that they work for the workforce in our area, and what we like about this bill is the flexibility and the ability to create some flexible programming at the local level. So we know sometimes we need to add to the housing stock, and builders are telling us that sometimes they're not able to do that because we're still in recovery mode and the cost of constructing a new house is perhaps higher than what the value is going to be at the end. So we need to create some creative financing tools at the local level to kind of jumpstart the new construction in the communities where we need to add. We have other communities that need to renovate their homes. Three Rivers has experience of buying houses, fixing them up, and then selling them to families. That's a great investment in our communities, and some of our communities, that's the housing need that they have. The other piece of this bill that that we see a lot in Greater Minnesota is manufactured housing. We have a lot of manufactured housing in southern Minnesota, and as we do across the whole state, and resources in this bill could be used to preserve and improve and then create some creative homeownership opportunities like cooperatives, and really kind of preserve that affordable side of homeownership. So I would urge you to support this bill, and thank you for your time today. I want to ask Russ Willie from the City of St. Peter to also just kind of give a real local example of something that he's working on as well.
Mr. Chair? Your call, Mr. Chair.
Between you and him? Welcome to our committee, Mr. Willie.
Thank you, Chairman Gunther. It's been many years. It remains a pleasure. Members of the committee, today is an anniversary. Let me start. My name is Russ Willie, as Jenny had said. It's been my pleasure to be the Community Development Director with the City of St. Peter since 2001. And as I started to say, today's an anniversary. Later this afternoon, the City of St. Peter will pause and commemorate or remember a tornado that hit the community 18 years ago today. I didn't think of it until I was sitting right over there. Today is the day, and it's a huge day in St. Peter, and a lot of memories, but that's in our past. After the tornado, the city was worried that we were going to lose population. 200 homes were destroyed, over 400 had significant structural damage, and over 1,200 had minor structural damage. The community was worried that there would be an exodus. People would leave the community, and they wouldn't come back and rebuild. So, to that end, the city commissioned a housing study, and a housing study at that time showed that there was a need for affordable working class housing. And today the new name is workforce housing. So the city partnered with the school district in St. Peter. We partnered with our good friends at Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership in Slayton. We partnered with our good friends at Greater Minnesota Housing Fund here in the metro area. The result is that in 2000, the city initiated Nicollet Meadows subdivision. This is a mixed-use, mixed-income subdivision. There are 78 single-family homes. There's a 44 privately-owned market-rate apartment complex on the north end, and then a 20-unit apartment that was developed by Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership utilizing the tax credit programs. But it's the 78 single-family homes. The city was the developer. We issued the bonds. We built the infrastructure. We priced the lots. We sold the lots. Matter of fact, we actually built spec homes. Nicollet Meadows filled within 3 years. There was an immediate demand, recognizing a continued demand. The city pulled the trigger on a second subdivision. In 2004, we began Washington Terrace subdivision. 87 single-family lots. Today, there's 24 units of privately owned market-rate housing being constructed on the north end of that development. We filled those 87 lots essentially in 3.5 years. It was a wonderful program for our community. So you didn't have to do the math. I've got it. There were 165 single-family homes built in our two neighborhoods. Of those, 84 were built by either the City of St. Peter through our Economic Development Authority or by Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership. We sold this house with no profit margin. We accidentally made a couple hundred dollars in a few of them because we sold them faster than we ever imagined. We didn't have any holding costs. And again, there were 68 privately owned, privately financed multifamily market rate units, and then there was one 20-unit tax credit program that our partners had built. Our neighborhoods were based on building better neighborhoods. It's a design concept of Greater Minnesota Housing Fund. It results in reduced lot size. We have lots in our neighborhoods that are 55 feet wide by 115 feet deep, and they sell like hotcakes. They sell like hotcakes. The neighborhood, if we can't accommodate it, the blocks have alleys and a rear-loaded garage, so we can reduce that lot size. Smaller size, again, 115 by 55. Building better neighborhoods, again, we narrowed down the streets, we moved parking on one side, we tried to use natural drainage to get the stormwater to drain over land instead of putting the pipes in the ground. We use a cost-effective home design. We bid these out in packages of three or four homes, trying to take advantage of some economies, and they're all walkable. The chairman's visited both of our subdivisions, and I think he would vouch that they're very livable, very desirable parts of our community. Again, we financed the infrastructure, the streets, the sidewalks, the curb, and the gutter by issuing municipal bonds without state assistance. The lot prices then were set to pay back those bonds to the penny, not to make an extra penny, but to break even without a single profit motive of the local government. I said both neighborhoods filled. We were able to put people in houses with mortgages either through the conventional Minnesota Housing Finance programs, Well, truthfully, at that time, we had a dedicated CASA mortgage fund. We don't believe we need that going forward. We believe that there's enough programs in the traditional Minnesota housing finance, rural development, veterans programs, that we can go to a smorgasbord and pick what we need to successfully put workforce workers into housing. The results. The average income of those that we put into Washington Terrace in 2004 was $37,232. I had people cry at my office during closing because they couldn't imagine that they'd be able to afford a house. They thought they were always to be a renter. And not that there's anything wrong with being a renter, but I think it still remains the American dream, even with the millennials I've talked to, that home ownership is that dream. The purchase price, the average purchase price in Washington Terrace was $144,282. If the city built the home, it was typically a split level. We would finish the upper level with the kitchen, the dining room, two bedrooms, and a bath, and leave the basement unfinished to the extent we could. So it would have room for two more bedrooms, another bath. We'd stub in the laundry room. Now, in the 12 years since the development, we've seen these families grow. Now those basements are finished. So those houses that were valued, say, at 140 are now being valued in the 180 region, a much greater tax impact to the city. The average first mortgage in our Washington neighborhood, Washington Terrace neighborhood, was $124,039. That's the first mortgage. We try to access projects that are going to put people in. With the first mortgage, it's going to be 28% of their gross monthly income. Now, in St. Peter, 48.5% of the renters today are paying more than 30% of their rental or their income towards their renting. They're considered distressed. I don't have the number on the top of my head, but that level of homeowners in St. Peter that are paying more than 30% is much, much, much lower than that. So what do? We sat out the recession. We wanted to continue to do this. We looked at a plot of land. 2007, we hit the brakes. And I think it was advantageous, but part of me says we could have continued this even through the housing recession in St. Peter, because the community, the area, is growing so fast, a lot of it with the growth pressure coming from the jobs being created in the Mankato market. We are part of the Mankato, North Mankato MSA. However, we are not part of the core communities. So we have some of the burdens without the benefit of that recurring annual funding coming to the communities as Mankato or North Mankato have. We have a housing study that was done. We had one in 99, as I mentioned, 2002, 2005, 2012, and now 2014. Data we found is king. We want to be on top of this. We want to know our numbers so we can be comfortable that these programs will work. We've bid a third project. We've identified land, we've actually purchased land, we've assembled the school, Southwest Minnesota, Greater Minnesota Housing Fund, the same partners. We thought we could just pick this up, start over like we did in 2004, be able to sell houses. We cannot do it. The economics of the situation have changed considerably. The 55 by 115 foot wide lot in Washington Terrace we sold for $20,700. And again, without a single profit expected. That exact same lot, exact same size, using the exact same formula, with the exact same street widths, is now $31,400, a 52% increase. Part of that is inflationary. Part of that is a labor shortage. I can't put my finger on what all the rest of it is. So the cost of infrastructure, the cost of the development's gone up 52%. Now, if we look at the cost of housing construction, the cost to build that house, it's gone up similar. So that house that we sold in Washington Terrace with the total development cost, the home, the lot, all of the cost, all of the marketing covered, we sold for $145,000, now is pushing $200,000. We cannot put the workforce that's in St. Peter into these brand new homes like we successfully did in the other two years. I wanted to give you a little bit of our history and kind of how I hope we can make an apples-to-apples comparison about the construction, the development cost of 12 years ago and where we're at now. The job market may have been recovering. I don't necessarily believe wages have kept pace. And without workforce housing and some level of assistance, we won't be able to grow our communities. I attended a workforce housing summit sponsored by the first U.S. congressman in Austin. And I know Jenny was there. And I know that this is a common recurring theme throughout the first congressional district, the southern tier of the state. Representative says that it's in the northwest part of the state. I have no doubt that this is a statewide issue, and whatever assistance you could provide would be greatly assisted. The bill, as I see it, provides the flexibility so St. Peter could access these funds and try to put together a program, try to grow our community. I could go on and on. I could talk about housing for a long time. But, Mr. Chair, thank you for your time. And members, thank you. I answer any questions.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifier, Representative Fabian. I want to ask a question. I want to make sure it's the exact question I want to ask because it's I'm kind of threading a needle with it. But it revolves around measuring the success. And I know on page 2, subdivision 6, we have a report talking about how many grants were given out. But that really doesn't answer my question. Going forward, how do we know, since we have an appropriation of money that we don't currently, or since the bill would have an appropriation of money, how do we know that this idea, this bill, won't just replace current efforts to provide affordable housing? And therefore, the goal in line 1.15, increasing the supply workforce and affordable owner-occupied housing, how do we know that we're actually going to increase the supply? I mean, rather than just appropriate money, thinking we're doing a good job, this program works well, and it funnels, you know, the intent, or not the intent, but the unintended outcome is that other programs just kind of wither on the vine because they're going here, and we're really not increasing the supply. Do you understand that question? If not, I can phrase it a different way. I'm just trying to make sure that the money appropriated actually leads to the goal of increasing, and how do we know whether that's going to happen or not?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Barrett, I'm, you know, my sense is that kind of goes back to the reporting, but I also think that sometimes home ownership is easier to measure, you know, which is kind of one of the main points of this program, this bill. Jeff, if you have that, how do we report on some of these issues now?
Mr. Washer.
Chair Gunther, Representative, I think there's a couple examples I can put out there right away. One of those is what I work with on a daily basis, and that's the community land trusts. We invest that one-time subsidy, and every time that there's a resale, we're able to ensure that another household is able to purchase that home. So we're increasing the number of households that we're serving, but then those homes are permanently in the community land trust in the sense that we're growing them, and we're able to demonstrate that leverage over time. I also believe that in the manufactured housing, the use of those funds would allow the dollars to go in. And one of the greatest challenges to manufactured housing is the attrition of the land underneath. Owners of the manufactured housing land sell out, and then we're losing those units. And so this would allow us to go in, take control of the land that sits underneath the manufactured housing to ensure that we're not losing units. And then if we're able to grow those numbers, I think to answer your question, in some ways, it's stopping the loss. And so coming up with strategies that not only are looking at growing the number of housing units, but it's stopping the loss of units, as was shared by Russ, as values go up, there's a good chance that we'll be losing those out of the market as well. And so it's looking out on how do we only create, but able to preserve those units.
Mr. Willie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Representative, one of the ways we measured our success is after the first neighborhood, the 78 homes, the school board went door to door to door, did an actual survey, asked how many children would be new to the St. Peter School District that had moved there from other communities or were still preschool that weren't enrolled. And in that one neighborhood, in one count, there were 41 additional children brought into the St. Peter School District. Now, you folks provide generous state aid to those students, so the school district's return on our development is approximately $250,000 a year. We also then wanted to look at the financial performance of our neighborhood and compare it to the other neighborhoods. The most exclusive neighborhood, the post-war development, the traditional development with, you know, 125 by 155 wide lots. Unequivocally, with one exception, and that's a senior development with patio homes, small lots, our subdivision provides a greater tax return in real estate taxes per net acre than the most exclusive neighborhood in St. Peter. When we look at municipal utility sales, electrical, water, and sewer, our neighborhood outperforms every single other neighborhood in St. Peter as of the number of utilities dollar paid per acre. And the final one we wanted to look at was, and it won't come to me, taxes, utilities. I'm drawing a blank, excuse me, Mr. Chair.
maybe a quick follow-up, Representative Fabian. Maybe let me ask my question a different way. Is there any risk that this program would just supplant another program that doesn't have the funding, and therefore we wouldn't accomplish the goal you're intending to accomplish, or not? Maybe there's no risk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Barrett, you know, I think one of the things that, again, attracted me to this idea is that we are doing something new. This is a new attempt to create housing and ownership within Minnesota Housing Finance. So, you know, how the other programs are doing, I really can't speak to that. But I can speak to this one with a fair amount of optimism that because you've got I mean, if you're going to involve home ownership and so forth, as the other testifiers have talked about, you've got all kinds of infrastructure that's there. You have local property taxes. You got possibly kids moving into the schools. So I do think that the benefit of ownership may be greater to the communities. And finally, what we're trying to do here, too, is trying to get the stakeholders, the cap agencies, the cities or whatever, to sit down with MHFA to come up with what are the parameters for this. And we're going to be able to respond to their concerns. And, you know, hopefully from that, with the reports, we can also see good benefits in many communities. Yep.
Okay, any other questions? Membership, anybody in the audience would like to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, I will renew my motion to have House File 3377 pass and be sent to Jobs. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion passes. Coming to you, buddy.
Mr. Chair, you do know that Representative Keel is a new grandma this weekend, right?
Oh. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You and Donald Trump share something.
Oh, there you go.
She was looking for something.
I think I can mine then. Grandson.
Yeah, and you're not a sociopath, so.
There you go.
Representative Norton, welcome to your committee. Would you like to move your bill?
I would love to move House File 3601. And I believe it's to go to higher education, Mr. Chair.
That's correct. Would you like to tell us all about it?
I would. This is an interesting bill. A couple years ago, we passed this bill, or a version of this, that was tax credits. And in the interim, a report has been done to review how that tax credit bill worked, and we found out that it didn't work very well. And in fact, in the 2014 calendar year, the Office of Higher Education approved 7 businesses to participate in the program. Only 3 of them ultimately followed through and claimed a total of $7,432. Not millions of dollars, not hundreds of thousands of dollars, just dollars. And that's pretty surprising, considering I think a couple million dollars were put into it. And so in looking it over and seeing, rather than give up on it, I think there's a desire to try to turn it into a grant rather than a tax credit. And so I'll tell you a little bit more about that. The tax credit simply wasn't enough incentive for small businesses to jump through the other hoops and hurdles that it needed to make the tax credit. And I believe in talking to some folks, and we may have testimony here, that they believe the grant will solve that problem. And this issue is particularly true for small towns. An example that was given to me is ViraCon in Owatonna. And they can't really take advantage of this because they're owned by a larger corporation, and so a tax credit simply goes to the larger corporation and doesn't stay locally enough to help the locals who are implementing the bill. Also, I believe the smaller communities feel that they're kind of an incubator for small startup businesses, and of course small startup businesses often don't make a lot of money their first year or two or sometimes 3, and the tax credit also is not necessarily helpful for them at that point. And so I think, Mr. Chair, what this is doing is putting in the word grant instead of tax credit, and making the program easier for the small businesses, particularly in rural Minnesota, to take advantage of. And so I think I'll just stop there, and we have some testimony.
Please give your name for the record.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Carolyn Jackson. I'm an attorney lobbyist with the firm Flaherty & Hood, and I'm here representing the Greater Minnesota Partnership, which is a nonprofit partnership consisting of economic development agencies, chambers of commerce, and private businesses. This is a bill that we lobbied for when it was initially legislated, and we looked at it in both terms of tax credits and grant programs. And Greater Minnesota businesses especially are looking for tools to recruit young people in engineering and in technical firms, and this was an intent to get those people to come try living in the rural Minnesota and Greater Minnesota cities, get a job and see how wonderful it is to live there. And it's just not working the way it was intended, and we hope that turning it to a grant program, especially for the startup businesses and for the businesses that are subsidiaries of larger companies like Representative Norton mentioned, this will make this a much more useful program for them. And we are in favor of this bill. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Norton, you have $7 million left in this program. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I have not been told we've left the appropriation open at this point. So I don't know if the funds were
$10 million to begin
held
with
and rolled over or whether it needs to be reallocated. I can check into that.
Okay. Probably should do that before your next committee. Any questions from the members? Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Norton. You know, regarding the bill, there's an area in the bill that obviously you're not adding to or subtracting from, but I would like to. On lines 1.19, Greater Minnesota means the 11, everything but the 11 county metro area, including a county that I represent, and Representative Johnson does in Isanti and part of Chisago. Boy, we have a tough time in Chisago and Isanti County attracting business. We compete unfavorably at times with Wisconsin. We compete unfavorably at times with the seven county metro area. They have I always forget the name of the program where they share revenue. And anyway, Wisconsin has half of the commercial industrial property tax that we have in our state. So I don't know. I'm tempted to offer a friendly amendment. But I'd like to ask you the question of why Greater Minnesota in this situation is everything but the 11 county metro area when in many cases, the metro area is the 7 county and Chisago, Isanti, Sherburne, and probably Wright, I would guess, make up the 8, 9, 10, 11 counties. Can you elaborate on that if you wouldn't mind?
Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, well, I was not the author of the bill last year or 2 years ago when it was carried, and I don't know why they chose that, and perhaps
Mr. Chair, Representative, this was a pilot program when it was put together, and we were concerned that there wouldn't be enough money to meet the demand. We don't have any objections to widening the geographic area, so long as it's sufficiently funded.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, would you willing to undertake a friendly amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'm interested in what you have to offer. I would just say I'm a little worried about trying to do it on the fly. If we were going to go down to the 7 county rather than the 11 county, that's something I could work on between here and higher education rather than trying to pick one and then have the other people say, what about me? Unless you have just the perfect language and the chair is interested in taking that. I can just commit to you that I can do it between here and higher ed.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, I'm not good on my feet normally. I am on higher ed, so we can talk about on higher ed. That'll be fine. I saw that, wanted to point it out, and you sound like you'd be open to that, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Anybody else like you? Anything to say about this bill? Anybody from the audience will have to anything for or against this bill? Hardly anybody in the audience left. With that, would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd renew my motion that House File 3601 be passed and sent to higher education.
Okay, well, all in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Passes. With that, we approve the minutes from last week. We're adjourned. Thank you very much.